Welcome back to Screen Crush Rewind. I am your host, as always, Ryan Airy, and today we are going to be talking about the finale of X-Men 97 Season 2. I have been very, very vocal about my love for this show all through Season 1. It was this brilliant combination of the familiarity and the comfort food of the original series with all of these massive character moments that reflect changes in the comics, but also showed us something new, like the death of Gambit. Unfortunately, that death has been retconned this season. And if you follow us on all of our, not retconned, but just, you know, erased, if you follow us on our socials, I went off on a rant about it a few days ago, which, you know, maybe was a little too impassioned, I don't know, but I really care about this show. And I'm excited to talk about it with some of my friends who are going to be joining us here today. First of all, you know him as Doug's attorney. Hopefully the little guy's staying out of trouble these days. Mr. Mike Mazzella. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Ryan. Yes, Doug is staying out of trouble. I'm excited to talk about this X-Men 97 finale. I think Captain America once famously said, "We don't trade lives," but Ursam the Celestial will trade lives over and over and over and over again. Every life is just fungible. You could trade one life for another. Doesn't matter. Any sacrifice
Wait,
is valid.
I thought it was Esan. Did I say that wrong?
Whatever his name is.
Video? Okay.
No, I think you were right. And I was wrong.
I was horrified when you said that, because the number of times for years I pronounced it Days of the Future Past, because I thought that's how I always just in my mind made it. And
really awkward when I present myself to him later and try to trade my life for Nightcrawler's life.
Oh, to Esan. Yeah. You have to make sure just
apparently
to apologize.
No sacrifice means anything anymore.
We'll get to that in a second, but yeah, I mean, we'll talk when everybody else comes on. So next up, we have the guy who's always on hold, Mr. and co-host of the Comic Book Club podcast, Mr. Alex Zalbin. Hi, Alex.
Hey, sorry, I'm actually on hold right now. Right before that, we went on with the show. My elf died. Oh, I'm sorry, my elf on the shelf died, and I use it to watch my kids during the holidays. I'm Jewish, but you know, you got to watch the kids. So there you go. So hopefully, they'll get back to me. We'll see what happens.
It was one of those elves that has the camera in it, I'm guessing.
Yes, exactly. I'd like to know what they're doing at all times. Also, I believe, not to correct you, but I believe it's Elon the Celestial.
Elon the Celestial. Okay.
Is it Elon?
Again.
Yeah.
I'm in even more trouble for getting that wrong now. Okay. Well, you know, we'll get to that elf dying in just a second. I'm really excited. And finally, coming back to the show for the second time, the deputy news editor at Collider. I can't believe she actually deigns to come on the program with us. Ms. Maggie Lovett. What's up, Maggie?
Hello. I feel like I should be wearing black for the deaths of all of my favorite little Germans in the X-Men universe.
Besides Kurt, who's the other one? Who am I forgetting?
Magneto.
Well, not little German. The guy's massive. He's a tank.
Technically, Maverick also is German. He was also
That was supposed to be a German accent?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I thought he was French. All these years, I thought Maverick was French. That's crazy. Wow, a lot of dead Germans this year.
No.
Even more than the episode where Cap and Wolverine teamed up in season 5. Like I said, like the thumbnail says, I have thoughts, right? We all have thoughts on this. Let's just let's take turns hearing what everybody thinks. I don't want to monopolize more than I already have. Excuse me, Alex, what were your thoughts on the episode? And we'll talk about season as a whole in a second.
Sure. I think it sounds like I'm mostly on the same page as you, which, first of all, you're never going to make me hate the X-Men. I love the X-Men. I'm X-Men for life. But there are a bunch of things.
Like your lower back tattoo says.
Yeah, exactly. There's a big fiery phoenix, but it's actually Cyclops phoenix, and I got to change that. I don't know. Me and Ben Affleck, we got them at the same time. Anyway, what am I saying about this show? The episode I felt was like not quite there. It didn't quite complete all the thoughts that I wanted it to complete that were set up throughout the season, and it felt like there was a lot of stuff that was right out there that they could grab and they just didn't take. I mean, Ryan, you and I were talking about this, I think, before we went on with the stream yesterday, but not to say something specific, but like can we get into spoiler territory or
do you want just... Oh, wait, well, okay. Hold on. Oh, no, we have a fun graphic for this and everything. Just a second. Spoiler warning ahead for X-Men 97 season 2 and 1. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah. I mean, just to throw out two specifics that have been bugging me a little bit. One, you have Kurt sacrificing himself for Rogue, which is nice, but there was no tie back to what happened with Graydon earlier in the season. There was no, not able to redeem my brother, but I shall save my sister. Just like, not to backseat right or anything, but it felt like that sort of thing was lying right there and an extra line would have helped. Or the thing that I was really looking forward to all season long, that great scene with Rogue and Apocalypse and Sabinur, at the fire back in, I want to say episode 4 or whatever it was, that felt like it's setting up them talking about love. Apocalypse is literally inside of Gambit, and you don't get any follow through there. And again, you know, you could interpret it as, oh, you know, it's just sort of under the surface. We're not being overt about it, but the show is not subtle. Everybody does a cool move and then says a cool line. So you got to put that stuff out there. You got to put your heart on your sleeve. And it just felt like maybe there's stuff cut out along the way. Maybe there's stuff changed along the way. I don't know, but a lot of stuff happened, but it didn't have the emotional landing that I wanted it to.
You know, to your point there about the conversation about love, I remember that conversation popping up in the previously on before episode 8, because there's this whole backstory that Gambit narrates that, hey, guess what? Apocalypse did fall in love and he gave her this jewelry and then she turned on him. And we don't, like, I thought that, yeah, go ahead.
All of that is in the comic that released this week. All of that backstory. Oh. With his romance is in the comic that released this week. Does anybody know that comic released this week? No. Nope. But it fills in that blank completely. Wasn't in the episode.
It's a comic set in the universe, like X-Men Adventures back then.
It's, the thing that's kind of crazy about it is, if I remember correctly, the X-Men 97 season 1 comic was kind of like, it was one of those sort of straddling the line. It didn't spoil anything. It didn't really tie into the first season. It was just kind of there setting up events. This one has been crazy crucial, like fleshing out scenes and filling out events. There was so much more about X-Force going and tracking down the Horsemen, etc.
Yeah, so like all the Horsemen stuff is happening in the comics. There's so much stuff with the Horsemen. And I was like, wait a second, did we even see the Horsemen in the season? Not really.
Just war for a half second.
Yeah.
And his bowl cut.
Yeah.
I'm glad they stuck with that. The character was designed in the 80s and to this day has a bowl cut. Maggie, what do you think on this episode? I mean, the comic book thing is like rocking my brain right now. I had no idea they were even putting one out.
It's a comic book too. It's, I don't know why they're not pushing it more. I feel like the Marvel account should be being like, hey, wondering what this was this week? Go read the comic. It hasn't happened.
There should be a QR code hidden at least in it that they could have, you know, retroactively made into the comic book.
Yeah.
I know. But not for a while, though. They haven't done the QR code thing. Oh, God.
Not often in the animated shows. Usually.
Well, they didn't have QR codes in the 90s. So canonically, it
looks very true. It's like Morph's pronouns. We're always like, well, wait, what pronouns does Morph use? Because originally they said that in the 90s, they wouldn't say they them.
They can hide a 1-800 number in the episode that we call into pre-recorded voice.
Exactly. Maggie, what did you say? I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. In terms of this episode, I've seen it 4 times now. Have not improved upon my feelings on it whatsoever since my first watch. I mean, my biggest complaint is the same complaint that I had a few episodes ago when I was on, which is the season has blown past so many crucial moments that it should have expanded upon. And I feel like you feel it so distinctly here. Like, I am so sorry, but the entire like external plotline celestial form of Rogue is the most like designed for action figures moment that the show has done thus far. It feels hollow. It feels like poorly like contrived. Like, it feels like something that should have had several more episodes. It should have been a cliffhanger. This should have been a cliffhanger. We should have got like so much more in season 3 that would have like expanded on this more. It should have had more time with the whole Remy as Apocalypse death going on. Like, that there should have been a lot more going on in this episode to build up a stronger culmination of all of this that wasn't everybody sitting and singing Kumbaya at the end while Kurt dies. It felt like they didn't think they were going to get a season 3, so they did their best to wrap everything up really fast and put a bow on it. But that didn't hide any of the problems with the season. I also, like, I'm sure we'll get into it later today in this conversation, but like, I have such an issue with Rogue sacrificing herself for Gambit in the way that she does, because if your intent is for the two of you to be together, what purpose does dying for him do? It just brings you both back to the exact same situation you were in 5 minutes ago. It's very, I don't know. It's a weird message. Like, yeah, kill yourself for the man you love. and then read the Bible and sit under a tree later.
I think Beast was holding the Bible the whole time, by the way, in the opening credits. I pointed this out in our breakdown. The book looks exactly the same as the one he was always reading. Yeah. And we'll get that in a second. There's a lot to get back to. Mike, I want to like give you the floor for a second. Just give us your thoughts on the episode.
So much going on. I mean, like a lot to take in, right? But also just the smash cuts all over the place, feeling like there were so many different things that they were trying to address and wrap up in this episode. To know that there was an accompanying comic that went with it, that they were saying there's even more stuff off screen that we couldn't show you. It just felt like there was too much going on. I would have liked more time to focus in on the kind of core storylines and character development that was happening at the jux of it. And I think that like the thing with Kurt at the end kind of totally caught me by surprise and out of nowhere. I'm kind of sick of Kurt always being shown as just this sacrificial character. And like, we get that he is, you know, very Catholic and very devout and, you know, is just a morally just perfect person almost. Like, it seems like he always does the right thing. The only time we've ever seen a depiction of Nightcrawler not doing the right thing is like the Dark Phoenix movie that came out where he like kind of gets a little savage in the train car at the end. But
well, he did like leave Graydon
Creed.
I love
the character.
He did pull off the whole "I don't have to save you" thing, Mike. He did pull off the whole "I don't have to save you" thing with Graydon Creed. Yeah. He left him in the winter, the South Pole, to die. Just saying. Keep going. Sorry.
Yeah, but he's still like he's just too good. He's too good a guy. He's so good a guy you want to puke, you know? Like, yeah. I wish that he didn't make this totally selfless act. And just all of them constantly being like, well, I'll sacrifice myself for you if you'll sacrifice yourself for me. It's a sacrificial Ponzi scheme. And at some point, this celestial is going to get wise and be like, now, wait a minute. I was okay with this at first, and technically time doesn't really exist for me because in a second is an eon and an eon is a second, but I think I know what's going on here. Like, they all just keep taking each other's place.
I'm picturing like a multi-level marketing scheme of yeah. Like, okay, I sacrifice myself for you, you sacrifice yourself for me, and then three other people will sacrifice themselves and it'll be good.
Technically, we're all
if you have three friends, forever. Your mom can go to Hawaii for vacation.
Yeah, I think at some point, like all of that kind of like loses its importance. I don't know, but then at the same time, when Gambit got shot in the head in the middle of this episode, I was like, oh no, they did not bring him back just to kill him like that. Again,
of course
did
they? Didn't. Yeah,
of course not.
They would never.
You know, I don't know. I was kind of all over the place. It does feel like there's something missing to this show. It feels like they put a bow on it, but they took a bow out of it. So I don't know if it's really got the heart that it once did. And I like it, but I don't know. I'm excited to see where it goes. The cliffhanger is great. I want Mystique as the villain. I do want to know, was she Mystique the whole time? You know?
That's what I want to know.
That's a good question.
I don't think she was. Cliffhanger. I don't think she was, but we'll get to the ending in just a second. First, I thought something else that they...
That's a lot of my thoughts. But
it is.
And
it
I
is,
liked a lot of the fights in this episode. Like, yeah. Okay, Wolverine versus Psylocke, awesome. Strong Guy versus Bishop, awesome. Like, just a bunch of the stuff that we got to see in this episode was very cool, but there wasn't enough of it. It was all like short little snippets because they had to fit it all into...
And Gambit blowing up Jaime Madrox's duplicates was also pretty great. Like, that's something I hadn't seen.
Oh, yeah, that was sick. Multiple man getting, like, collapsed into one person. Very cool. Yeah.
Can I throw out something conversely about that? Because I agree with you guys. It's fun to see these characters fighting against each other. But there was something that felt a little lacking in the ambition of the staging of the action to me in this episode. A lot of what characterized the first season in particular was starting to stretch more into anime looks, adding that on top of what was in the previous animation in X-Men 97. And you got sometimes, like, I'm thinking about the episode where Rogue goes on her sort of solo mission with Captain America and just has elongated legs while she's kicking people that exaggerates it. It looks cool. It sits in moments. It lets things sort of, like we're talking about, take their time and expand. And you didn't get a lot of that. You got a little bit, like the Gambit blowing up Madrox scene, but then there are things that felt like Jubilee and Havoc having a Top Gun fight that basically involves zero X-Men powers is very weird to me. And that, to me, again, is just one very specific example. But I think in the first season, we would have seen them, I don't know, I'm just throwing out there, riding on top of the jets, throwing their powers at each other, using those, etc., mm-hmm. versus like throwing out other missiles to stop the missiles.
And or return it feels to the like, helicarrier.
Yeah, yeah, it just feels like that extra level of thought was missing a lot of this stuff through the action scenes, through the emotion, etc. Mm-hmm.
It does make me wonder if action scenes cost a lot more to like animate, mm-hmm. and since they had obviously things that were going on behind the scenes, if that meant they had to budget cut on showier action sequences. Somebody on Twitter pointed out the fact that like we got a whole episode where they recruited Colossus and then he's not even involved in like the final fight.
He's at the school. He's not
he's
even
at home watching
credit.
The kids. He's yeah. doing a very important
Somebody's
job.
Got to.
He's the unsung hero.
I did was appreciate painting. Yeah. I appreciated they were able to
processing his grief and painting.
Good for him.
I love the note from was it the previous episode where they were like, "Well, he can handle the school." And I was like, "As what yeah. teacher? Leave somebody else behind. He's got to go to the bathroom or something."
And maybe next season. It was 15 people in the opening credits, like the big intro thing this time. So we got to like. So Wanda's got to know more mutants this shit. We got to start like, I'm enjoying the relationship between Polaris and Bishop and that's all cool. But I mean, look, when you guys know, I've talked to all of you about this and on the internet, when episode 8 happened, I was like, I knew this was going to happen. I knew Gambit was going to come back from last season, but I hate it because remember it was such a landmark episode. That was, I remember where I was when I watched that, you know, like I remember how I felt. And I listened to Happy Nation over and over for
me too. It was my top song last month. Even
it was crazy. Yeah. Like that hit me so hard and it felt like this is something new. They brought him back. And when they killed Nightcrawler, I thought, okay, at least someone died, because if it would have been everybody's holding hands and singing around the Charlie Brown Christmas tree at the end, I would have been really upset.
Hello. Magneto is still dead. I'm still not over that.
Magneto's dead. But also Kurt sacrifices himself in this like white void with the Celestial. He's like away from everybody else. They don't even really necessarily know. I think it's just Rogue piecing it together at the end. She's like, well, if I'm not dead, that must mean somebody else traded their life for me. And oh, where is Kurt?
Oh no, so, where's my brother? Oh well, no.
It was a Christian sacrifice is what they were going for. And Mike, I think you have a point. In later years, his entire character has been defined by his faith, which is, I mean, I'm sure that's how he defines himself, but that's not just who Nightcrawler is.
That's
sorry,
not all of who he is. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I took it that Beast
Alex,
told
sorry,
them,
go,
right?
Go ahead, Alex.
I was just going to say the Beast told them, I think. I mean, that's what I took away.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's obviously the in-between from her seeing Hank with the Bible to the flash forward to everybody singing Kumbaya and being happy that Apocalypse is gone. I don't believe that he's completely
here's gone. The thing, Maggie, I think you hit the nail right on the head earlier when you talked about how, and season one had the same problem, give it some room to breathe. And you're right. Maybe action sequences are more expensive. How about some dialogue scenes? How about just some people talking, you know? Pad that shit out. Because one thing that occurred to me, and Alex, you were talking about the jet scene, that's Scott's brother. Now, they don't know that at this point in the episode Cold Comfort, they shot each other like, how come my powers aren't working? But I was like, X-Factor is now the big bad of the season. The X-Men have never, they met them once in 1995, like 30 years ago. No one remembers that. If you really wanted to set them up as the big bad. Well, yeah, that's true. It's true. But for us, we don't remember X-Factor. I mean, I do, because that's me. But anyways, they should have set that up. There should have been an episode or would have been back in the day where Cyclops and Alex discover who they are. And it's brother versus brother. And you got this whole Summers family conflict. And there's Nathan's uncle now taking, you know, giving him orders and stuff. There's just a lot of drama in there. Why is Wolvesbane in the show? You never got any good Madrox stuff. If you're going to do it, do it. If you're going to devote an episode to X-Force, great. Devote one to X-Factor. Are they just people who go around kidnapping people? Why should I care? So that was,
I feel like that was their attitude with everything this season was, we're going to throw in little bits and pieces of a bunch of things. We're going to do very little exposition or explaining because we're going to assume that everybody has seen everything that's come before. But then even beyond that, we had Celestials in this season. We had Kang the Conqueror in this season. I don't think Kang has ever showed up in the animated series of any of the animated series before. Has he? Not in the Iron Man, not in the Captain America, not in the Spider-Man, and not in the X-Men.
he was in Beyond Good and Evil parts 1 through 4 in disguise as a little guy named Bender, and he shows himself to be a Mortis.
And again, I'm talking specifically about the 90s animated universe, spectacular.
Oh, yeah, he's been in Mighty Avengers, stuff like that. But, like, no, he kind of had a cameo. Technically.
What this is based on, the 90s animated universe.
Yeah. Right. But I don't mind that. I don't mind filling in the details at the edge of the universe. What I mind is ignoring the character development in this actual show. Alex, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I wanted to back up what you're saying exactly right now, which is that to take it sort of conversely, I don't mind the brisk pace of the show. That to me was one of the joys of the first season. Like, I cannot believe this is all happening right now. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Ryan, the other day you brought up the Inferno episode. Inferno is my favorite X-Men crossover of all time. And I was like so annoyed that they did it so quickly. But most of the time it is just hitting you nonstop with these insane things that are happening that just bowled me over while I was watching. The problem is it needs to come out of the characters and you need to be serving the characters first. And you can't just add in elements. I got in a little bit of trouble posting a piece on my website yesterday about this episode to me feeling like the worst of 90s, 2000s X-Men crossovers, where it's valuing a hologram on the cover over the actual plot of the book. And it's like, how can we get all these teams together? Now they're all punching each other and things are exploding. But yeah, what's the actual story? What is the story you're telling? And the story that told, I think, in the first half of the season so effectively was very focused on Apocalypse in multiple timelines, setting him up very specifically as an antagonist, not even for the rest of the X-Men, but for Professor X and Magneto. And they really just paid lip service to that in this last episode where Apocalypse's kind of dumb plan was like, what if I turned all your X-Men against you? Ha ha! And I'm like, you travel through time for that? I don't know.
For half a second, yeah. Maggie, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Just to wrap up, I was going to say the big thing I think that they lost track of here is Magneto's sacrifice, not sacrifice, but Magneto's murder midway through the season. Very similar to...
episode 2, basically.
Yeah, it was in season 1... Gambit getting killed fueled the rest of that half of the season. That was something you never forgot at any point. Magneto happens almost exactly the same place in this season, and they hit on it, but they sort of like, well, Polaris is fine now, and Professor X is fine now, and maybe we'll come back to it. I guess we'll see.
I think characters were definitely not put front and center all through the season like they were in season 1. Maggie, go ahead. I'm sorry. You had your hand up and everything.
No, I was being a good student.
You really were. Proud of you.
When we were talking about the fact that, like, characters have been, like, really underserved this season, it made me think of the fact that, like, Rogue feels lobotomized this season. I don't have another word for it. Since I wasn't here last week, I am going to carry through my gripe from last week and this week all in one with this little rant here. She does not speak this season outside of, like, maybe a line an episode. And even then, sometimes that line is just like, okay. She does not speak until Gambit returns to the plot, which is, like, really bad optics for, like, one of the strongest characters. Like, Jean is able to exist outside of Scott. Storm is able to exist outside of Forge. Like, all of these characters are allowed to exist outside of their significant other, except for Rogue. Her storyline does not start in this show until Gambit returns, which is weird. And, like, then when she returns, she is kind of dumb. Like, I don't have another word for, like, how she acts in the previous episode with Death Gambit and then being like, yeah, sure, I'm going to marry myself to you and we're going to be immortal. And, yeah, let's kill her. And, like, oh, I have a jewel stuck in my chest. And, like, I'm totally okay with this. The whole thing is so strange to me. Like, it feels, again, it feels like 90s writing, but, like, the bad 90s writing, because there was some good 90s writing. It just feels really regressive for a female character's entire personality to hinge on a male character coming back to life and serving their plot.
It's almost and like then, they sketched out the story beats first and then made her fit those beats.
Exactly. Sorry, like, no, and I was just gonna say, and then, like, there's really weird optics to me of the culmination of all of that then being her sitting under the tree with him reading the Bible. It just feels very trad wifey, which is also, I don't know. It It's weird. I don't like it.
Couple good Southern kids reading the word together. What's wrong with that? Wholesome, good old wholesome 90s TV.
I don't like it in 2026. I would have been like giving it a pass in 1997, but like we're writing this in modern times. Let's chill just a little bit on the strange optics, Disney. That's my rant. I'm good. I can be silent.
No, it's a good rant. I don't think the return of Gambit was at all justified in the show.
No.
I've never been a big Gambit guy. My favorite Gambit story is when he's Gambit, introduced in Ultimate X-Men.
Say that again?
Way too soon.
I love Gambit, but it felt too soon. I think you're right. It was unearned. Like it was like they were trying to shoehorn it into this season because they wanted him to have this interaction with Apocalypse, and Apocalypse is happening this season, but it felt like we didn't have enough time to mourn and like miss Gambit and wait for him to come back. And then they brought him back and we saw how many different versions of him throughout this resurrection. There's like normal Gambit, there's Death Gambit, there's Death Gambit that is possessed by Apocalypse, there's Death Gambit that is not possessed by Apocalypse, there is there's one that got shot in the head. There were 15 different versions of him.
Okay, somebody else pointed this out. When Gambit dies, Rogue keeps his jacket. So how does he have his jacket when Apocalypse brings him back to life? And also, why do they not take him out of his clothing when he's on the gurney? Why is he not actually like hooked up to anything?
Well, it's so that he can have that fight scene in this episode. And
yeah, you don't want him doing that with his ass out. Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Make him in the hospital and be like, "Where's my thing?" Then he could go like to Rogue's room and get his jacket because she has his jacket. Like, there's so many things. Like, those are cool character beats that I guess are just too much for an animated show.
Yeah, to your point, Mike. I mean, I think they took the two goofiest X-Men costumes, Gambit and Apocalypse, and they just combined them into one guy with a scary face.
He looked like a juggalo.
Like a juggalo. Yeah, 100%. He really
and it's
did.
Just
looked like
thing.
A guy walking around my street fair and smoking.
Like I was saying, it's confusing. I'm an X-Men fan, so I'm used to confusing. Things get absolutely insane. But having the whole genesis of it, it seemed like we had three apocalypses, but clearly, I guess there weren't because one traveled back in time and then died. And then they had that whole round robin of the previous episode of the spirit getting sucked in and back and in and back and in back.
Yeah.
I was trying to think about it from the perspective of somebody who has not been reading X-Men comics their entire life, being like, what is happening here? What is even going on in this show? When, not to keep taking the converse opinion, but I'm okay with where Gambit came back. I think it could have been more impactful if it was more explained rather than him being turned into the Horseman of Death who was taken over by Apocalypse. If it was one of the two things, I think it would have worked
first.
Fine.
Right.
And then maybe done the other one later next season or whatever, like give them 100%. Time to reckon with, oh my God, we lost Remy. And maybe Angel can also offer aid and comfort to them and say, yeah, it's horrible. You have to kill him. Like, if you can't save him, you have to kill him because what he's going through is unimaginable. But we got none of that. Mm. So I want to talk about the ending, but first, you know, last season, they're thrown throughout time. We knew that they met Sabinor. They're in the future. The playing card and the thing, it set up Apocalypse as the big bad this season. If you're keeping score at home, Apocalypse was the big bad in the original show more than once. In fact, they thought they were going to end in season 4 originally, which is why it culminated in a 4-parter where Apocalypse tries to take over all of time. You can't get bigger stakes than that, right? Like he went to the center of time and took over time for a little bit and recruited all these villains and formed his own like villains, masters of evil, and he got beat. And then he comes back in season 5 as like an outline for a little bit. So I've talked about this before. I don't like this villain of Apocalypse. To me, he's somebody who like sounds badass, but when you really get into him, he's kind of boring and he always gets beat except for in Age of Apocalypse, the only good Apocalypse story. What were your expectations? And anybody can take this prior to the season. Did you have high hopes for Apocalypse and where do you think about where we ended up or should it have gone a different way? Maggie. Thank you for raising.
Love how you raise my hand like a good little Xavier student. Yeah. No, I thought we were going to get Age of Apocalypse. I thought we were going to delve into that, especially with like everybody kind of in different universes, different, you know, parts of the time stream continuum. And I thought he was going to be like a legitimate big bad. And instead he was not. Mm-hmm. It's it is, unfortunately, I will say that, like, that is the history of Apocalypse. He is always presented in X-Men comics or movies or TV shows as this big bad guy that they have to face, and then he is never actually as cool as he actually is. Which is strange, because, like, on paper, Apocalypse comes across as being in, like, an even bigger threat than somebody like Thanos.
Mm-hmm. But
he has yet to actually be a big bad worthy of all of that.
The X of Swords storyline introduced, or maybe it was around before, but it was prominent in X of Swords, that he's also a sorcerer. Mm-hmm. And it gave him this whole kick-ass backstory with his wife and kids, and I loved all that. And I felt, for the first time, we actually got Apocalypse doing interesting shit this season. He's a young person. He's trying to figure out who he is in the world. Then the Celestial tells him who he is. We didn't really get a whole lot of that push-pull, the angel and devil on his shoulder. But that's fine. You know, it's an animated series. We got to keep moving on. And then the whole, to hear that they did that backstory, but it was in a comic book, breaks my heart. That should have been an episode. That should have been like when the Mr. Sinister episode in season 5 of the original show. It should have been this whole thing focusing on him.
I feel like that's, they should have depressing. Done this whole season in ancient Egypt. Like they should have just stayed in the past and had the whole season be the rise and coming of Apocalypse. And then maybe this whole season is a build up to him becoming Apocalypse and becoming really terrifying. And then he disappears and then he's not the villain next season.
I think he comes
back in season 5.
The
you know,
biggest like, mistake they made is that, and I think this is coming out from everything we're all saying now, En Sabadur was cool. He was a good villain and interesting. And the design was awesome. The voice work was great.
He was interesting.
The decision to keep Apocalypse the same he was in X-Men, the animated series, made him very silly. And this is no insult to Ross Marquand doing the voice. He's an incredible mimic. I don't know how he does all this.
God.
It's great. But they should have made a choice to be like, it's kind of silly. This is a little bit of a silly, like,
I'm Dr. Claw,
you know, type like Skeletor voice or whatever. Yeah. And the design is a little goofy with the A. Even in the finale, when they show off Elon Musk, the Celestial, he has like this
voiced by Matthew Watterson.
Yes.
Voice actor.
And he has like almost the A of Apocalypse, but without the little, you know, line across it. And I was like, oh, even that, you could have changed the design to be like a little cooler in this new version of Apocalypse, because he's kind of lame. He has the possibility, like Maggie was saying, of being a Thanos level threat or even bigger, but he did not get here. And it's funny, when you were laying out what he did in the original series, Ryan, I was thinking, versus a four-parter where he takes over the world, his plan here is a Disney villain plan. He wants to marry Rogue. That's it. That's his whole plan.
Yeah. Which would have been cool if we could have seen the backstory that led into that. His heartache and actually define him as a person. Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I think that's the lesson that they take away for live action, is if you are going to do Apocalypse, if you're going to try Apocalypse again in live action, do En Sabadur. Do a younger version of him. Set it in the past or have him time traveled into the future or something like that, so that he's more grounded and realistic and we don't wind up with Oscar Isaac in 20 pounds of latex purple like face paint and stuff.
Maybe it would have been better listening to your ideas if we would have had, like, season one followed the same structure as the original series, which was very much like, this episode is about this. Maybe these two or three episodes are about this, but it followed one arc. It would have been interesting to see if they would have pursued something that was a lot more serialized, where in every episode, you might get a little bit of them in the future and how dire it is to see Apocalypse ruling the world. And like, this is where we end up. This is worse than Days of Future Past, right? This is everybody's being, you know, wiped out by this thing, by this villain. Mm. While at the same time, we're seeing this villain be a genuinely cool dude in the past and somebody they all relate to. And we're wondering, can this change? What I think was missing there was the intercutting, but also what's going on in the present day. I thought that Forge and Bishop worked it out way too fast on locating where they were. And if we would have seen a little bit more of like how everything goes to shit when it's just X-Factor and X-Force creating this kind of mutant civil war, it would have made more sense when that war culminates in the finale, because then it would have been like this tension. I don't know if you remember like Deadwood season 2 or 3, when Al Swearingen like is mm-hmm. out of commission for most of the season, right? Or that season of Mad Men where they were going to sell the company and Don wasn't there the whole time. Like, you got to get back. There's a big problem to deal with. And I think we would have had that if they would have just maybe not stuck to the original formula.
No, I agree. I think that was the season that I was expecting coming out of season one, because of the way they're like, everybody is in different times. Mm-hmm. My mind over the last 2 years was like, oh, this whole season is going to be, obviously I had the assumption that we're going to get Gambit back at some point. So I knew that was going to be a part of it, but I thought the whole thing was going to be like the pieces of them working in all of these different times, trying to fix things, trying to get to this point where they can all culminate together. And then I thought like the finale would be the reveal of Gambit as a horseman of death, which would then mm-hmm. introduce like Rogue having to grapple with that and having to figure out like, what are we going to do? Like, I want to save him, but also what does this mean for us if he's working as an agent of Apocalypse? And like, that was going to be like the season two cliffhanger, which would then introduce a season three where they're having to now deal with a very different version of what they thought they were going to have to deal with Apocalypse, because now it's one of theirs. Doesn't necessarily matter who the other horsemen are. They don't care about them. They're not X-Men.
We never saw them. Yeah,
exactly.
They're not there.
They have no invested care. And I think that would have also made like Gambit's return also have weight to it, because then we're left once again being like, is this going to mean he's going to have to die, or are they going to solve this? I don't know. There's, like you said, like if they had been able to intercut more, I think that would have helped a lot.
This is sort of my hill to die on and getting a little far afield, but this is the inherent problem with having an animated show that is 9 or 10 episodes and that's it. I mean, not to go way too far afield, but I think about this all the time, very specifically in terms of Star Trek, which even years into streaming has not figured out that the ideal form of Star Trek is 22 to 25 episodes. So you could have a bunch of hangout episodes in the middle.
Some of them need to suck.
Exactly.
I've talked about that in our live
animation is the same way.
Bottle episode.
Yeah, you need like, you need to decide, you need to write for the format you're writing for. And right now what they're doing is they're writing X-Men 97 season 2 as if there are 67 episodes coming out over the course of every afternoon after school, versus mm-hmm. they're doing 10 episodes, which exactly like you're laying out, that's a serialized structure. Yeah, exactly.
They used to do like 3 episode arcs and now they're trying to fit that into one episode of
exactly.
this, which is
one 20 minute episode.
Much. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're Mike, if you're lucky, because Inferno is half an episode.
Like we went to the Savage Land this season. So many things happened this season and they were all just like boop, 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 boop. Just real quick.
I was actually grateful for that. I've never liked this. I don't care about Savage Land.
I'm saying we did so many things. Like, can you believe all of the things that happened this season in just these 9 episodes? And none of it was enough. It feels like we were watching like a flip book of the season.
And don't even get me started on Wolverine's bone claws and how that was just completely like, let's get this done. We got to go. Like,
ching, got him.
And then he barely uses them in the finale fight, too. So it was like,
It doesn't even factor into it. You're right.
Mm-hmm. No X factor there.
Let's move over to the ending, right? So, Mike, you brought this up earlier, so I'd like your thoughts on it. So, I guess, what did you think of the ending? And you brought up a great question about Val Cooper and Mystique.
I think it just, the Mystique thing, I think, is the only like really interesting thing that happened at the end of this episode. It was kind of like maybe an obvious thing or a thing that we were all suspecting or thought might be happening the whole time anyways. But it just, because it raises that question of, if I go back and rewatch this season, are there times where it's pretty clear that that is Mystique? And that's obviously something that we want to see play out. Like, what are her goals now? What is she trying to do? Mm-hmm. Where is she
working for Apocalypse?
What does she
again?
Want? Yeah.
Yeah.
That adds an interesting like flavor to the rewatch if you're going to go back and rewatch these episodes, but that's about it. The whole thing with Nightcrawler sacrificing himself. I mean, I just feel like all of it just really cheapens any amount of sacrifice. And obviously like with X-Men, like somebody dies, they never stay dead. There's a million different ways mm-hmm. to bring X-Men characters back to life.
That's
and they've done it so many times.
A few times in the
and
comments.
So I think at this point, like as X-Men fans, you're expected to think like, okay, if somebody dies, they're going to be resurrected or they're going to be cloned or there's going to be a time traveled version of them or something's going to happen. They're coming back. They're not staying dead. But this one feels particularly cheap because it's just like, Rogue offers herself up in exchange for Gambit. Then you have Nightcrawler come in and offer himself up in exchange for Rogue. And it's like, okay, so can we just have like a never-ending stream of, well, I love this character and I love this character. And we could play this game where we're like, okay, who sacrifices themselves for Kurt? I think it's Beast. Okay. Who sacrifices themselves for Beast? Okay. I think it's Storm. Who's sacrificing themselves for Storm? It's going to be Forge. Like, we just keep going down the line and we play this game all day of who ultimately is the least loved X-Men.
Yeah. Esan's like just one of you. One of you or all of you right now. Like, I don't care
who's
who
at the end of the line.
We sacrifice Professor Xavier for everything.
We get down to Morph, and Morph is like, and I will sacrifice myself for Wolverine, and then there's no one to stand up
for
Morph.
I would love to see Professor Xavier get a little bit of villain shading like he eventually gets in the comics, either when he's keeping like Danger captive, or what was it? He did a really nasty thing, and it's sadly just prior to the Utopia arc that caused Scott to walk away from him. What was that?
Xavier. I don't know. There's always secrets. Was that the, like, they had a secret other X-Men team that he sent first?
Yeah. Yeah. He sent, before the, to Krakoa before the other team. Like, that's some, and then wiped their memories. Like, that's some nasty shit.
It's weird. It felt like I was just going to say, it felt like that's where they were going halfway through the season when he's screaming and sobbing and crying at Apocalypse. And then they, like, cured him with the Danger episode. And he's like, well, got to build my big X-Corp building. You know, my.
I understand not wanting to do Onslaught,
which
but
sells
you could
things.
At least. Have Magneto's dark side.
I did want to touch on something that Mike said about Mystique, because I just had this conversation with a friend, I think last night or the night before last. I do wonder if we're going to get like a reveal that like sometimes Mystique was Val, because it would be interesting if they fixed everybody's complaints about Emma by being like Emma knew she was working with Mystique on something, because people were mad about Emma being involved with, you know, kidnapping children, which is very out of character. Because I could see Emma being like, yeah, let's cause some trouble for the X-Men and working with Mystique. So I hope that is something that could happen.
Not enough Emma this season for sure.
So I, you know, fingers crossed.
To the point, let's talk about that exact thing. Cause I want to get into like next season and some super chats here, but we do have a super chat here from Silhouetted Animator that points out, notice how the post credits time jump skipped 1999. One, I think it's weird the show wasn't renamed to 1998, 99, 2000. That would have been really cool. But if this is a year after 97, if we're in 98, I don't think Mystique was Val the whole time, because it's the presidential election of 2000, which went even worse this time with Graydon Creed becoming president. And that is when she shoots her.
They're still
and, like,
counting votes in Florida. We don't know if Graydon Creed
exactly.
is president yet. They're still counting votes.
Yeah,
in Florida.
They really should have said that. Let's talk about next season before we get to these super chats. Where do we kind of see this setting up? Because I'm like, this is awesome, right? If you're going to have Mystique as an agent in the government, and X-Force has these pilot of mechs, and Graydon Creed is president, that's cool. I can't wait to see how he's impeached in episode one and thrown out of office. You know, like what are we? What are your thoughts on next season and optimism wise? Without, you know,
is it him or do you think it's Mystique?
Oh, it's all
no,
Mystique?
I think he won.
I could see Mystique being multiple people throughout this season. And
she's
like,
watching kind of a video of Graydon Creed accepting the presidency while she's in Val Cooper's office. So I doubt if she can be two people at once.
But she could have been out on the, you know, shaking hands, kissing babies. Mm-hmm.
True. She could have been helping her kid get elected president. Proud mama.
I feel like... I mean, I feel like the clearest thing this indicates is a back to basics approach for the series. I'm sure they had a discussion, or I would imagine they had a discussion in the writer's room of like, we got to get back to the opening sequence where there's good mutants and evil mutants and they're running at each other and people are stuck in the middle. And that's probably what they're trying to do. You know, it'll be more complicated because it's X-Men and Graydon Creed obviously is a terrible bigot. So Mystique is going to be in the right. X-Men will have to protect him somehow. They will be conflicted about that. People will go back and forth, et cetera, et cetera. I do want to say, and I hope this isn't too negative, but I didn't love the ending scene just because, to me, if I am correct about what I just said, it feels to me like this very regressive, oh, let's just go back to what works attitude that I've been getting from some of the Marvel TV productions. This sounds so negative because I watch all this stuff and I like all this stuff, whatever. But it's the same thing with the Daredevil show bringing back all the Netflix characters constantly, which again feels like a, let's just go back to what works discussion. You know, people like that. Let's just do that. When there's a difference between nostalgia and passion for the material, and what I loved about X-Men 97 season one it was not the nostalgia of it, not the like, oh, I'm sitting on my couch, I'm a kid again, eating cereal or whatever, but that it challenged us in some ways, that it was like, we love this material. How can we break these characters? How can we really like, put them through the ringer and do something dramatic and new and different and interesting? Once you're comfortable with it, we're going to like wreck your heart. And if they do go back to the basic dynamic of X-Men in season three, that's fine. Again, I'll be there. I'll watch all of it. But to me, that feels like moving it backwards rather than moving it forwards. That's all.
Interesting. Maggie, what do you think? You don't want to.
I'm sorry.
I don't know. I do agree with you that it is very much like, let's just get back to the basics and not do anything risky or like unique or fun. I'm afraid of that. I find that to be like corporate synergy across the just all IP right now is kind of dealing with that, where it's like, let's just do what worked in the 90s. I don't know. I love Mystique. I don't necessarily think of Mystique as being like the big bad of Marvel. Like she's not. So I am curious to know who the actual big bad is going to be.
She working for someone?
Yeah, she's got to be working with somebody. I do wonder if Apocalypse isn't like completely done. But again, this might just be like my wishful thinking, because I felt like Apocalypse was resolved far too quickly. I don't know. I think a lot of it is, again, like I have a lot of expectations for like what I would do if I was in the writer's room. And I think that makes it really hard to like guess where they're going with things. Because like, if I was in the writer's room, I would want to do something with like Gambit having to like deal with the fact that he died and he came back and then was killed again and came back and like, not to quote Buffy, but he's died twice. Surely that's going to have an impact on his like psyche. I don't see him just like immediately getting back out there and like being an X-Man. I don't know. I would bring back Magneto. I would bring back Nightcrawler. I mean, like,
for why people, not? Bring them all back. Yeah.
And also, I don't know. I feel like we obviously know that we're going to get like the Brotherhood of Mutants. We got the teaser at D23 that leaked. So like, we know we're getting some of them. And like, I just don't think that group works without having Magneto involved. I don't know how they're going to do it. It just, I don't know. I'll put faith in them. I'll be here whenever it comes out next year. But I don't know.
I'm still looking forward to it, but I thought this season was a step back. Sorry, Alex, go ahead. Then we got to get to some super chats.
No. Just real quick, I would say that I do like the idea of them potentially working in some sort of relationship drama with Rogue and Gambit, where they are left off at a place of, finally, we're back together and alive, but making it actually way more difficult than that, I feel like, is very inherently X-Men. So that would be a cool thing to see.
It would be great. I would love that. I love the soap opera stuff. And I feel like as long as they don't go the way of like some of the comics presently, which makes the relationship like way too easy, I would love some actual like conflict in it. That's good television. Same as Gene and Scott always have their...
Take your time. I think that's, we all agree on that. Just take your damn time next time.
We never get to see these characters have normal relationship issues because they're constantly being bombarded with life and death situations.
Boy, one day 95 gave us $5. Thank you so much. And said it felt like Savinor was interesting, but he lost all appeal when he changed. I wish the season didn't speed run his transformation. As you've heard, we all agree with you. Mm-hmm. And speed run's probably the great sin of this series. Meet Normus 49, no questions asked there, gave us $5 and said they better not resurrect Nightcrawler. His ending was perfect and shouldn't be reversed. Mystique is about to be a menace. I agree. I think definitely on the Nightcrawler front, you got to start killing these people or else death loses all meaning. It's like later seasons of Heroes
when Cheerleader Blood brought everybody back
from the dead. If it runs on long enough. Hey, friend of the channel, Brandon Ficarra, gave us $10 and said, Ryan, you're the best of us. I love the season. Not perfect, but really good. I want to pitch the Eternals animated series in the style of X-Men 97. Might be the only way we get to see the sequel to that. So I like that. Thanks, Brandon. Thanks for watching. Malik 6091 gave us $10 and said, late to the stream today, but just want to say season 2 was still good, but not great, which is what I considered season 1. I feel we may have felt the effects of hashtag no bow in season 2. Maggie is pretty much the same scripts, right?
I don't think it has changed. Having done interviews now with like almost all the cast, pretty much everybody just said the only thing that really changed is the order of episodes. And like they came back in and like changed a couple of lines. But so far, unless everybody's being really good at lying, it doesn't sound like that much actually changed. beyond structure.
When you talk to them personally, because I heard stuff from the cast just one-on-one that doesn't quite corroborate what you're saying, but because I didn't ask them about that, it was before season two came out, but they're very frank about things. I don't think that they're like united front telling lies to reporters, right?
No, that's why I'm like, great, I don't think they're
really cool people, by the way.
I love them.
Silhouetted Animator asked, gave us $5 and said, have you read the X-Men 97 Strike Files comics on Marvel Unlimited that fills in the blanks for stuff unexplained this season, like the Eternals? Look, fine, I will read those eventually, but I shouldn't have to read a comic book to understand your TV show.
That is my biggest thing right now. I'm like, yeah. I don't want to have to read something else to understand why this is happening.
Just like I don't want to read a Star Wars novelization to know why Rey is a Palpatine, you know, like tell the story within what you're telling it. And Silhouetted Animator gave us another $5 and said there's two tie-in comics called X-Men 97 season two. So there's two concurrent tie-in comics.
Yeah. Wow.
What?
There's the print comic and the digital comic. The print comic is X-Men 97 season two, which they originally sold as like a bridge between season one and season two, but it's not. It 100% is not, like we were talking about earlier. And then there's the digital comic as well, which is on Marvel Unlimited.
It sounds like they tried to make this as confusing as it could possibly be.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Anything to get people to read comics, I guess. The Incredible Hulk gave us $2. Didn't even know he watched the channel. That's awesome. The Apocalypse. Yeah, same. I mean, you smash, brother. It's actually the Inedible Hulk, not Incredible Hulk. This is a different Hulk altogether. Not a bit. Read it wrong the first time. Said this apocalypse of the, is this the apocalypse of the 90s or did he go back in time in season two, episode one? It's apocalypse of the 90s, right?
Yeah.
Like, cause his spirit comes back in season five. So he's still Apocalypse, walking around doing Apocalypse shit. And then we see his origin, but it turns out his origin was preordained and they never could have changed it because Eson, the celestial time is one flat circle. They don't explain it. Right. I don't think they needed to, but I don't think he traveled back in time, no. Sam Willis, X6H, do we? What?
Yeah, I thought he did. He said, I'm going to go back to the 90s and travel back.
I'm
going to
strike them when they're at their weakest, the 1990s.
Yeah.
And we see him in that kind of more mechanized form when he has that line.
Yeah.
The theory that I read.
Did that follow through, though? Because he didn't. That's confusing.
He never actually struck at any of them.
Right. The theory that I read that made the most sense to me, which they, again, should have had on screen if this is actually it, is that the version of Apocalypse from X-Men, the animated series, is basically slumbering through all of this. So the one that we see holding the card at the end of season one and all through season two in the 90s is the Apocalypse who traveled back in time.
I write breakdowns of this show, and the fact that he said that about striking in the 90s in episode one was such a non-thing. I didn't even remember it later on or give a shit about it.
He showed it in all of the previously ons, recaps.
And in the trailer.
He never did it. Yeah.
Nope. Yeah. I don't know. That's a great question. I did miss that.
But I think I'm sure Alex is right. It's like
the
modern Apocalypse is kind of like Cap frozen in ice at this point, right? Like he's in a slumber. So the one that we're seeing is one from the future that has traveled back to a time where he is concurrently
incapacitated. Tell that story then. Like, who gives a shit about this guy? Like, he's the most boring one-note villain of all time. Like, even when he takes Gambit's form, you'd think it would be like, all right, so was the dead guy, the dead guy, survival of the fittest, but you raise up a dead guy. Is it you're possessing him because he can summon this external who's your ex, but that's the only way you can get to her? Is that the whole point of this? Like,
how lucky is he that the guy that dies in season one is part of the Thieves Guild that worships his ex? Like, he really lucked out. Apocalypse did. Like, good job, Apocalypse. Everything worked in your favor and you still failed.
Sam Willis, X6H, gave us $5 and said, not X-Men 97, but in the Doomsday trailer, in the moment where Steve's hand goes out to bring Mjolnir to him, who's the person behind Steve? That's me. I can announce I have a cameo in the movie. Yeah, they brought me on. I was just on a green screen and they just filmed my hand and that's it. I have no idea until I saw the trailer. I didn't know, but that's my hand. Angela, I'm kidding, by the way, for all the people who might take me seriously. Angela 1350 gave us 10 bucks and said, "Hey y'all, first time catching the stream in a long time. In my opinion, this session felt very cobbled together to tell multiple stories in a short time. This could have been two seasons." And by session, I think they mean season. So at first I read that and I thought you meant our conversation.
That's what you said. Season. About. It was cobbled. You did say our season. Conversation was cobbled together, which kind of true.
No, you said season. I agree. Session, I think me for misreading it. Yeah.
They tried to jam too much into too few episodes, and they could have stretched all of this out and given us more dialogue.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And there's such limited airtime on Disney Plus, by the way. You know, you got to compete with all the other time slots.
All the ads.
Our last three super chats are from Garzilla. For $5, I hope with less off-screen upheaval that season 3 can make a return to form and finally pay off on the onslaught buildup because the team that they were teasing hard. Maggie, they got rid of that episode, right?
Yeah, I don't think onslaught is ever happening. I mean, look, we can all take what Bo says with a grain of salt, but he was very, very vocal about the fact that they completely removed and said no to him when he was still on the show, Onslaught. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they're going to suddenly turn around and do Onslaught. And as we've all seen, as people have been resurfacing his tweets, he wasn't wrong about how the season went. He did say that they were going to have Kurt sacrifice himself for Rogue and Gambit. So
I didn't read all that. I didn't know he gave the whole thing away.
Who knew? He spoiled everything last year. We all just were like, okay, guy, whatever you say.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah,
and honestly, I hope we never get Onslaught. I hate Onslaught. I don't.
Well, at the clip, they're running out of stories to adapt. So at some point, they're going to have to do Onslaught. I mean, they're basically going to have to go back and reboot the whole show. Garzilla gave us another $2 and said Morph was the unsung hero this season. I agree. I think that was the best part of the Wolverine getting his calls back too soon episode. Sorry, Mike, what was your question?
I was just going to ask, was there supposed to be a 10th episode? Because I thought it was odd that there were only 9 episodes this season. Last season had 10.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that it ever got to that point. This is piecing together the stuff that Bo has said over the last like 2 years at this point, was that it sounded like all of it was supposed to be 10 episodes, but again, who knows if he's telling the truth or not? So unreliable narrator.
It felt like, first of all, Onslaught, I kind of agree, it's not even a character. He's something that was spurring out a crossover and a reboot of the universe. And that's pretty much it for the comics. But the story was leading up to it, I think, having Xavier get angry, having him specifically talk about like trying to hold on to Magneto's memories in his mind.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely hints of it in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it would have made more sense if Apocalypse is some sort of astral entity now who's invading other bodies. In the comics, what spurs Onslaught into becoming this all-powerful being isn't just Magneto and Xavier. It's he takes in Franklin, Richards, and he gains power. So if Apocalypse goes in there and you have this combination of Apocalypse, Xavier, and Magneto, that gives you Onslaught. That's cool. That actually pays off on a lot of the storylines from the season.
Yeah. I mean,
let's bring Gambit back instead.
And I was like, we have Apocalypse and a Jewel that, as we can see, you can just shove in places. So
Chekhov's Jewel, shoving places without consent. Garzilla gave us $5 and said, since they're running at the same time, what are our thoughts on the Caped Crusader season 2 and My Adventures of Superman season 3? I've started Caped Crusader. I'm behind on My Adventures, but I think they're both great shows.
My Adventures rules. That show is so good. There's so much heart, so much humor. The action is amazing in it. I don't know where we are in the season because I watched the whole season a while back, but it's excellent. Like, do not miss it. If you have missed it, go watch it on HBO Max. Caped Crusader, maybe this is a minority opinion. I don't love it. I don't love the animation style. It feels a little blocky and weird to me. And it's often kind of slowly paced, and they make changes for change's sake. I mean, to spoil one little thing, the Riddler is called the Riddler because he riddles people with bullets in this season, which I'm like, I don't know. I don't think that's why they call him the Riddler.
It's a little too like film noir-y.
Yeah. There is one episode of the season which has Carrie Kelly, the young Robin from Dark Knight Returns, in it, which is great. Awesome. I love that episode. Seeing that dynamic there is awesome. And if you only watch one episode from this season on Prime Video, go watch that because it's a lot of fun. But the rest of it, I'm like, don't know.
And obviously we're not getting paid to say that because Alex dissed the other 9 episodes. All right. We got to call it. Maggie, you can read all your stuff on Collider, where you're the deputy news editor. And you're just one of the best. And please come back again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mike, you got a comedy show coming up?
I do, yeah. You can come check us out at the Second City. Follow me at Mike M Comedy on Instagram. I post everything there. I'll just keep it short. If you like improv, if you like Star Trek and stuff, check me out. Get the info. Come see a show. And thank you guys for having me on again.
Thanks so much, Mike. And, Alex, wait, are you still on hold? What's going on?
No, I just got off hold. I found out my Elf on the Shelf came back alive next season, meaning next Christmas season.
Oh, good, good. So I'll excellent, excellent. Always appreciate that. We'll see you later. And we want to hear from you guys. What did you think about the episode and the season down in the comments? Or you can find us on our free-to-join Discord server. And if it is your first time here, what took you so long, welcome to the channel. Please subscribe, smash that bell for alerts. For Screen Crush, I'm Ryan.